We're recording on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woi-wurrung people, and we acknowledge them as traditional owners. We'd also like to pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
Midnight to midnight. Welcome. Screening. Welcome to midnight screening. Welcome to screening. Welcome to midnight screening. I am screaming. I am screaming.
I am screaming.
Welcome to Midnight Screening, where we let you stay up past your bedtime with the movies you probably shouldn't be watching. I'm here with Anthony and our little cat Pearl. I'm here with Eliza, who is fresh off recording some sort of dive into Jason Derulo that I haven't heard yet. They've already heard of it. I haven't experienced it yet, but you seem changed from it.
Yeah.
Maybe no one's listening now after what you said.
Maybe. I actually feel exorcised. Like, I feel like I'll be more normal now. It's good.
Amazing. Yeah. You're very plain. You started going to the gym now. I don't know what's going on. Yeah.
Welcome to all of our new listeners, by the way, from the uptick in
Jason Derulo fandom.
And I have another guest on the show. We had our good friend Meg Jansen on the show. And yet again, it's someone that to introduce them is kind of funny because, like, yeah, they're an actor, singer, dancer extraordinaire, was recently seen as Columbia in the Rocky Horror Show. But also, they're our roommate and my lovely partner, Darcy Eagle. Welcome.
I told
you. I asked you multiple times.
I think in my head I was like, I expect when I said to Noah that you could improvise what my introduction was, that it would actually be a more formal introduction of like my career highlights or something.
I don't know.
I thought you were just going to be like, say a funny joke about me being your girlfriend.
No, there's nothing funny about it. My love and dedication to you is not a joke to me, actually. Okay. Welcome to the show. We're proud to have you. And thank you for listening to the show. Again, you listening to the show is the funny case of like when we have other listeners, they're not someone that just like comes home and then gets to talk to us about
it. Oh, I'm only here because I listened to the Jason Derulo episode. I was hoping for more of that. Yeah. No.
You get fully off topic. You just hijack the show for more extended. Yeah, exactly. Well, you picked two really good films based on the theme. You've taken our intro tag for the show being the show where we let you stay up past your bedtime with the movies you probably shouldn't be watching.
Yeah, it's like a good zag. Like, I feel like normally we go for like fucked up kind of like horror-y movies, whereas it's like, yeah, these movies would actually corrupt kids in a different way.
And are literally about kids, shit they should not be watching or activities they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, well, I was not a horror fan like you guys were growing up, so I watched a lot of coming-of-age movies. So I guess to me, this was my, like, I was thinking the other day, how did I find these movies at like 13? That was when I first watched them.
You'd seen them both, yeah.
Yeah, I'd seen them both by that age for sure. And I was like, I'm almost 100% certain it would have been going on YouTube and Googling.
Fucked up movies.
Or searching the YouTube bar like, no, not fucked up movies. It would have been searching coming of age movies. You know what I mean?
Really?
Because I was so into coming of age movies growing up, especially at that time and that age. And I was, you know, getting into movies in my own right.
Oh, so you heard about them not inside. Because like we should say the two films are Harmony Korine and Larry Clark's Kids and Catherine Hardwick's 13.
I can't believe you watched it when you're actually 13.
Yeah.
That's like very
incredible.
Trippy.
Probably just before, but yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Which is worse because then you're like terrified for what being that age
no,
will
I don't
want
to get a tongue piercing. Nah,
especially if you've just looked
I
up.
I don't want hot Nikki Reed to corrupt me. I should say hot. She's a child in this, but she is a very cool person.
Yeah, she's vibes. Especially if you've looked up like coming of age films and the first thing it tells you is like, this is how your age will come is Kids and 13. Like that's brutal. I first, like what I knew of, especially of Kids was like ultra divisive, edgy, sort of very
ethically exploitative
film. Like that's the history of it I knew about. But definitely based on, I guess, the initial like little bits we've spoken about with these films, I think that like whilst that rep definitely does stay true for both of them, there is still like a lot of perspective to both of how they talk about a coming of age story as opposed to just like existing to be edgy or whatever, I guess. Like that kind of surprised me.
They both also have a big, I guess we can get into this when we compare them as well. Like I was saying before, I found more similarities while like researching them as well. And I guess also their reputation, both of them have that kind of like very real, very authentic and mostly because of the way they were made.
Yeah.
In part that kind of, the scenes that they're kind of referencing really ring true to people.
Totally. Before we dive into those, I feel like I should now flag because I've said effed up movies. Did anyone watch either of these on effeduppmovies.com?
13 is on effeduppmovies.com?
No, I feel like kids would be, right?
Kids would be, I feel. It has some like really shocking scenes.
Like
I watched 13 on Disney Plus, which I thought was amusing. Yeah,
literally.
It's on there.
So like
I can picture some mom being like, my daughter, she's 13? Maybe let me type that in and see what comes up that's good for like a 13-year-old. All right, bye. I'm going to get
I thought I was
going to
get the Jason Robert Brown musical 13 with Ariana Grande.
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah, banger.
Well, also we're going to talk about kids being owned by Disney for a moment before Weinstein and co. were like, we can only distribute this film if we sell it. It's got a whole long, equally exploitative history post the film being made.
13 does.
Kids.
Oh, yes. It's a
crazy.
No, I was about to say, though, do you think like it being on Disney now is quite funny because more 13 than kids. Kids is still pretty shocking, I think.
I think so.
And it's a very brutal movie. But 13, especially post-Euphoria. I mean, like it's almost like Euphoria wouldn't exist without 13.
So, totally.
And that is the lineage of those kind of shows. Yeah. But you're like, kids these days would not be shocked by 13. I really don't think. Like maybe a parent would still be a bit distressed by it. But yeah, I can't imagine a teen at all feeling like, I honestly, you look at the Letterboxd reviews, I think every Gen Z idea of this is like, yes, cunt. Like, you know what I mean?
Literally.
Like they're like, this is my Tuesday night, mama. You're like,
bro. Yeah, literally. She's like rolling on the floor high. I'm like, oh my God, I love that top. Exactly. Do we start with, Kids was the first one to come out. So maybe we jump into that sweaty ass New York City.
Oh boy, great accents though. Great New York accents.
Great New York
that
accents.
That kind of added to it.
Let's take a left.
That'll be you
down.
Guys soon. You're going to New York so soon. You'll be the kids.
I was thinking.
I hope it's just like kids.
Oh, no.
We're going to be on the hunt for the kids. They'll all be old and really sad.
Gosh, I love movies.
Was the first film directed by Larry Clark at age 52, who had been an art photographer. It was Harmony Korine's first script, who had gone to make even more fucked up movies. But was 18 when he wrote this script and he appears in the movie and he looks about 12. Gus Van Sant produces it, who's sort of like a, you know, maybe slightly elder authority figure of like, arty indie films of the time.
Yeah, and like mentored a lot of that idea of like a young person with like a really bold vision.
Yeah.
And then
and also showing like really raw teen lives or whatever.
Yeah.
But the cast were all completely uninitiated, street cast. They were picked up through a flyer that said no previous acting experience necessary. And even though Clark has said later on that everyone in the film shown was over 18, the flyer, like we have the proof that the flyer called for 13 to 19 year olds.
Oh yeah. And there's not a single person in that movie who looks over 18 years old.
Like
the way he talks about the interesting one about like this film in general and like really enjoying it on the rewatch is like, I hadn't seen it before and I'd been exposed to it as something, I knew of it as something that was just like purposefully divisive in mostly in trying to be like brutal, raw honesty, no filter. And like for something that felt like it had a pretty distinct, like Dask commented on this and I like want you to speak to it more because I fully agree that I was caught off guard by like how much of a perspective there was to it. But then in researching the movie, it's like Larry Clark himself in particular, the director, is just like all the boys in this movie, someone that is just very blind to themselves and like the actions they're taking in like making it in a way that the film, yeah, to me really has a perspective and a message that is not just like, this is the way kids are, but is distinctly
it's
like,
quite manipulated to you in a way you didn't expect.
Yeah. Like he, in the way that he speaks about the film and the drama initially after it came out around exploitation, such as like a really good case of it is there's a scene on a couch between four boys and they are like young boys. Mm. And it's like, it's one of the best scenes of the film. It's four boys sharing a joint.
It looks like art photography. Like you could walk into a gallery and see.
That's the one where you're kind of like,
the
oh.
Picture
the
and he's like, I didn't know it was weed. And you're like,
you were there filming kids. Like,
deny that to yourself.
You
do you actually believe your own bullshit? Do you think
what's
we're dumb?
Funny.
But
I
it's
mean,
an amazing,
not,
it's, yeah,
not
the whole
funny because in parts it does sort of sound, I mean, we've got a lot of new actors and at some points they're incredible and other points a little stilted, but it has an improvisational quality, but actually the script was quite
really
closely
scripted.
Followed.
Yeah,
it was
totally.
More the party scenes that were improvised and that's where a lot of the controversy came from.
And the
that,
comedy,
like,
some of the stuff the kids say out of pocket is like so funny.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I love when Casper is in the bathtub at the end of the movie and makes a song about himself. He's like, I'm Casper, the dopest ghost. All the girls want to fuck me. Ha ha, I'm Casper, the dope ghost.
He's the best actor to me, as in like, oh, I guess to me at least that rang the most true. And who are... I
like the lead boy for like what it says.
Of Rosario like, Dawson as well? Is that how you
Rosario
say it?
Dawson's like...
She's beautiful.
She's not in it enough.
No, she's not.
She's only like the first
She was
act,
like
really.
Found on a... Because I watched it thinking like, oh, well, she's so amazing. She must have been one of the
She's
actors
probably
that they
in Disney
found.
Channel shit before.
But her
she
and
was
the
standing
other,
on a balcony and they're like, who is that girl? Bring her down here.
Wild. And her, like the only two people out of this that don't really have, like I'm sure in their own ways it was traumatic, but that have the like, I guess, success story of getting a lot more work is Rosario Dawson and Chloe Sevigny. Who have, like worked lots in the indie scene and stuff.
Well, it's worth mentioning, obviously,
oh, totally.
A sad note that Justin Pierce, who played Casper, I think he's incredible. And he was nominated for the most stuff off the back of this movie.
And
I think
went on to other like indie.
Yeah, he did. He did other stuff. But he committed suicide. I mean, I don't know if you trigger warning or anything that, but really horrible. Committed suicide at 25. So,
And another member of the cast died at the age of 30. And whilst that isn't like a case of suicide, it was a case of just being like equally frequently expressed being like, I thought I was going to be an actor. Mm. I was trying to be in the industry and didn't succeed. And both of them are a case where, there is the natural degree to which like it's a widespread problem that we don't have an industry that supports child stars. But that in a film like this particularly, what it exploited in the making of the film was maybe something that, you know, we can morally and ethically reckon with as being like, wow, I don't know how I feel about filming this, but like, it's pretty incredible. Like it speaks to something. I think it really works as a film, but especially once it is released and distributed now, because you've made this thing so fucking loosey goosey and it doesn't really, you know, like it's such a like
they haven't picked
indie
up
production.
Industry skills, you mean?
They have no industry skills and Harmony Korine and Larry Clark, their careers get launched. The Weinsteins come out, they make 20 million off this like tiny film and all these young kids have like fuck all really. Yeah. Like it's that thing where, the spirit, the loose spirit that I'm sure the kid, again, you're a kid, that it was exciting to them. The second the film exists for the public, it's like now a lot of them speak about being like, like I didn't see myself the way that I saw myself on that screen. And to have this film was talked about as like,
it's so
look
real.
At these rat
wow.
kids, look at these horrible boys.
It's almost like a documentary.
Exactly. And be like,
well, again,
oh, apparently that's what I am.
Well, again, I picked that up, I guess, to say, like expand on the thing you were saying before, which is this movie was so heralded and critiqued for being so real and what that meant. But to me, watching it a second time, like it's the kind of movie you always go like, oh, you watched that movie once. So kind of, you know, like I actually like it had a clear impact on me more in the sense that I remembered it so well and this was only the second time I've ever watched it, you know, and this is like
me watching it
like decades later, you know what I mean?
You clocked every beat that was about to happen.
Yeah,
and you watched
I
it
remember
once,
it like. Really well. And I, so watching it a second time, I was like, no, it feels really intentionally, depends what you say about Larry, whether or not he's aware of himself
this
in
this,
but very
off,
brutal, even in the script from Harmony, like it's very repetitive, very repetitive use of certain words, of certain themes, like layered on. It's relentless. It's like, you know what I mean? I do think that there is like a nihilism that it's trying to communicate about like the 90s, about kids at that time, about being about a teenager. AIDS epidemic. Exactly. Like there's, you know.
And like particularly about like just the thing I guess I didn't expect, I guess this is the state of when you brutally show these kids. I get that. But like I had thought that it was just going to be like the brutal honesty of this life. But really what it is constantly pointing at is like these boys, these like young men being trained to be older men.
Yeah.
And what that looks like. Like there are like, so many moments where I'm like,
what I hadn't
it's the training ground of
it. From other times I've seen it was like, I feel like the movie is constantly asking a question of like, when do people become ruined? Like
totally.
There's all these shots of babies and you're like, when is that baby going to become horrifically misogynistic?
And like, or when there's the scene with the like older man in the cab and that idea of
that
like.
That is such an authentic scene to me.
Oh, totally. So
the movie roughly follows Chloe Sevigny's character, Jenny, around town. She's trying to find this repulsive character, Telly,
who
she discovers made her HIV positive. When they had sex. And so.
When she lost her virginity, the only time she ever had sex.
Yeah.
She goes with a friend who's more sexually active to like accompany her to.
That the almost feels like a kind of PSA moment, being like, it only takes one time, your Look, slut friend.
I actually kind of wanted like, to flag. I'm like, I don't want to interrupt what you're saying, but I'm like, I do think it's worth flagging that there is like something to comment on about like HIV stigma and this movie, and especially like watching in the current time. I mean, the central plot obviously is like a deep fear of HIV and AIDS, which is, you know, very valid and especially at the time, but it is worth saying that like the stigma towards HIV massively impacts like people getting tested, people disclosing their status, people using like,
like needles or
No. Just actually like people who are positive, even using the resources that are there for them. So because of stigma, so, you know, it's worth even also just being like, I literally was doing a bit of research because I was like, I don't want to come into this and kind of, you know, not comment on the fact that there's so many like misunderstandings currently about HIV, and one of the huge ones being like being undetectable and being detectable. It's two different statuses you can have as a HIV positive person. And so basically effective treatment now can reduce the amount of virus to the point that you're undetectable in your bloodstream, which basically means you will not pass on HIV, which just, is not necessarily common knowledge. So anyway, I thought worth popping in there and saying that because this movie does use that as its like dramatic.
Yeah. And the idea I don't think the movie is altruistically trying to raise awareness and be like, or anything. I think it's just like this looming threat in the background that adds to that, like, when do you become an adult? When does the world happen to you and you can never go back to being innocent or anything?
Yeah. No, thanks, Stas.
Definitely worth pointing out. But the plot in basic is kind of two groups of the kids, Telly and his bonehead friends and Jenny, Chloe Sevigny's character, I think. Wandering around town trying to follow him. But the way it starts is with both groups, these groups segregated by gender, kind of boasting to each other about what they think of sex, because sex is the main thing that's on all the characters' minds at any point in the movie. What did you guys make of this opening bit with the girls kind of maybe in a false way being like, I love sex. It is the best thing. And being like, you go, girl. And then cutting to the guys who'll say, oh, I'm telling you, listen to me. Like they use all this emphatic language. It's like, trust me, listen to me. I'm telling you, like really trying to.
It is the thing that
highlight themselves
it,
as ladies men when they're like 13.
They're children, and like the casting of Telly in particular, like Leo Fitzpatrick, like he literally looks like a toddler. Mm. He has this big, like almost like lisp because of I don't know, just like he has like his big like buck teeth and like talks like. You're talking to a child. And
he wants to be with virgins. Skinny, it's like, you're a baby.
Zits, and like the way it will shoot, like the opening scene you know, is really just like, it's
right
about
in the middle of his, teenage him, kind of development.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like that thing of like him trying to like take off his, like he's still in his socks and he's like awkwardly trying to get on top of this, like the however many like young women who have been like, oh, you really care about me, right? Like are clearly like hesitant to lose their virginity to him and he's telling them he's going to care
about them.
Sexual
coercion is a huge thing in this movie. Like, you know what I mean? That's...
Yeah, exactly. And off the back of Liz...
Like really documents that quite well, the kind of the like track way of how, in which he sexually coerces these women into having sex with him.
And that all those women are usually are like in that scene Eliza just described, like presenting to each other like this, you know, agreement with the patriarchy
about, of like the I'm happy to be in it and stuff.
But then every time you see a woman in the film engaging in it, it's after they've been like lied to that they're safe to do it. And I just wanted to comment, Liz, on what you said about it being a film about like when does the break happen? And I was thinking a lot in this about a film that has a similar rep for being extremely indie, made on the cheap, very much the spirit of like local casting or making something with the resources available to you that is like good because it tells a very like human story, like a very grounded story that I think has dated so violently, which is Clerks, which is film.
I watched that with you one
time. That to me is interesting to be like, this is all these men who like, existing in this way and in this manner is supposed to just be like it's a straight comedy and the way they exist is supposed to be funny and the comments make it supposed to be funny because they have done the performance of like this horrible masculinity for so long that like it's just life now. Whereas a film like this, it feels so distinct that all those scenes are about being like, it still is like a suit that they're trying, you know what I mean? They're still like, they're like little like I animals like boasting to each other. Like it's not life yet. It's not what it looks like to be, to believe all those ideas, but still be able to like exist in the world as a grown man yet. And you're right that like there's something about the bridging point of these boys being like, I'm ready to like throw my shit at everything I see and like piss on every corner. You know what I mean? Like,
well, don't they, I kind of feel like they use Casper a little bit as that cusp energy. Not in a way where it's so obvious.
I was interested, by the way.
But I do think that like they give him he's a couple of redeemable, up. Not redeemable, but kind of moments where he connects to his humanity. He's the one who pays the guy on the train. He's the one who goes and gives his like apple to the little baby. Again, those things that you kind of go like they're there as a bit of a reflection point of potentially what's to come for them or what their past was a couple of years ago as like true kids, children.
And then he
commits this horrendous kind of, you know what I mean? We kind of see him fully dip into that thing and the next day, the movie ends with him going, what the fuck happened? You know? Yeah. And it's like, well, you just completely lost your innocence.
But
like
he's still chosen to be the narrator of the end of the movie.
And very true that
they
he
dismiss
reads
him completely for that.
Like he does cruel things. He does like extremely horrible things the whole movie. But also you're like, this looks and exists like a person. Like the way he engages with the world is like, there's a lot of texture to who you are as a person, as opposed and to weirdness. Telly just being like, I have, there's a like a monologue-y narration moment where he's saying like, the one thing I'm good at in life, like my life's mission is to fuck. Like I just want to get laid. And what he means is like, to take someone's virginity or like to take
very masculine ideal of kind of being like, I live by this ethos. And because he has nothing, he has class is a huge element of this movie. Like he has nothing. And I think that's what I think about the talking about sex things. Sex is kind of a representation of living in the now. Like that kind of very like, I am alive and it's anything. It's drugs. It's, you know what I mean? It's sex. It's alcohol. It's any of those dopamine sources. And they're kind of like, I don't think beyond those moments. I go at life for those like high peaking moments because the future is when you see all of their parents, like all these parents that are run
the
down.
The morning after the big, like the film takes place over a day and it's a lot of real close up shots of like young kids, like acne, the way their sweaty bodies look. I would say never the movie, I feel like maybe the Weinsteins sort of like rustled this up to get some PR going, but the movie was like very censored or very debated and considered like pornographic material by some critics. I don't think it ever romanticizes these kids having sex, like especially Telly being the main one. Like you said, he's like looks like a little child. It's never actually eroticized or anything.
Yeah, exactly.
But then the day after that, it has these shots of unhoused people, like clearly going yeah. through some kind of breakdown in public, and they're extremely distanced wide shots of like mm-hmm. probably Clark just in the back of a car, like driving near public parks around New York, and like with a moving hovering camera meters and meters away filming an old person going through some kind of breakdown, and you're like mm. oh shit, this is the day after for yeah. what the fun these kids had last night or whatever,
and the kind of life yeah. they're building themselves up yeah. for themselves yeah. yeah yeah. It's just so hard that like I don't know how I don't know, we've talked lots about like ethically you can have problems with films and that like lead to their quality still, but it's really interesting that the very things that like make the experience of making this feel like someone was always going to shoot a film like this. Someone's always going to be like, my thing is I want to capture the real raw thing. And I think that a huge ingredient in, as you said, Das, the like surprising perspective of it, which is to me about like the emotional vacancy or like hollowness of these men, is that he is almost like telling on himself in some way, that like Clark. To a large degree, his pursuit of making this captures that what to him feels unpointed or like it doesn't have a perspective to it kind of really does. Because there are moments where you're with, you know, Chloe Sevigny in the cab
when
on the way
to the
party.
The car saying, I'm gonna die.
And you're like, so you know that like these women, like their experience of that vacancy is just being like
stop
paralyzed.
Men and women as well. They're like little boys and girls.
Literally, yeah, exactly. Again, not after that night. Like, yeah, it's a really hard film. There's a lot more that can be said about the, did you watch the, have you seen the documentary?
No, We Were Kids or whatever.
We Were Once Kids.
No.
Yeah, I feel bad that none of us, that's what I mean. I was like, oh, damn, I didn't watch it in time.
Yeah, so it's a documentary.
It can be an unofficial Twin Peak. I mean, Triple in the Attic that we suggest.
Exactly, yeah. But, and that film is in honor of the two actors that died post, the two kids that died in like since the film's come out.
Maybe before we move on to 13, I'd like to challenge you guys with the quite negative read that scholar Bell Hooks had about the movie. Mm-hmm. They considered it to be a fundamentally conservative film and reported back that everyone they knew who was doing work with teenagers, youth work, or like with people who are HIV positive said they were so saddened to go to a film that reproduced the notion that somehow HIV is this thing that these teenagers know nothing about. The visual politics of this film identify with heterosexual misogynistic boys, largely because they are the people who speak, who narrate. The girls speak only in that sort of pretend documentary moment, which was just a slick moment to make us think that there's gender equity in a film that goes on to never let them speak again. And Hooks said that anyone who liked the movie had just been seduced by transgression itself rather than any actual substance of the transgression.
I feel like the main thing we've commented on is being like, I found more of a script and more of a perspective than what I thought I'd be turned off by is the edgelord divisiveness of it, and felt quite a perspective to it. I think there's a lot of validity to it thinking it's presenting something truthfully when it's actually really presenting quite a like it enjoys the stigma and this idea of this
more
extreme
shock value,
cynical,
like they don't even know about safe sex.
I think that's super true. Yeah. And kind of commented us on what you were saying about like, the fact that so much of the conversation around HIV is just
really
based
fear-mongering,
around the fear-mongering
again,
that we've been like,
I would both agree and then be like, I got an enjoyable, when I say enjoyable, it's not an enjoyable movie, watch out of almost seeing it as if the intention was not that, even if it was. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm kind of like, I don't think there is any attempt at gender equality in this movie.
Yeah, but to me that kind of adds to the doom.
That's what I mean. I'm like,
I don't
like
this,
then
what's happening?
I kind of actually was like, oh yeah, the nihilism of this and what that's saying about the time, maybe it takes the hindsight to kind of be like, that's what you were saying, whether it was true or real, to everyone's experience or not.
I feel like Clark and Corinne would both say like, yeah, transgression itself is the point. Like, we just wanted to like show fucked up scenes. Like,
and he still is addicted to the, Corinne is very much still addicted to the idea of like what cinema is to me is like, I always want to make something that no one has seen before. And like that sort of idea for cinema is not that exciting to me, actually, to like come from a place.
I like it.
External. Well, like
as I really like Spring Breakers as well.
I love Beach Bum.
Yeah, and Beach Bum. Yeah.
You say Beach Bum, yeah.
I feel like, yeah, Harmony is the better get out of this movie. You know what I mean? Like the things he's gone on.
I agree.
I kind of enjoy more.
Because to me it seemed, I was looking up a bit of Larry Clark's other films.
His movie Bully is more fucked up than this. Bully looked, and really good.
Yeah, yeah, I want to see Bully.
I haven't seen that, but I did write down for some reason that, what was it? It was like he went on to make,
Larry
Clark. I regret that. I have a, this is about 13, so I think we need to move on. Otherwise, I'm going to start to bleed them together.
It's too much music, no?
Well, aren't you two forgetting something?
How about channel 27?
Blood pressure of 160 over 80. Heart rate of 88. Normal sinus at this time. Respiratory rate of 18.
Everything is going to be all right. You have only to stay inside. You only have to stay all right. Do not look outside. Do not look outside. Do not need to look outside. Look out, look out, look out, look out, look out.
All right, guys, great news. We're finally out of the 90s. But
phew.
Now it's 2003.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Guess we're all going to have to get tongue piercings and elephant rings.
Oh, no. Watch out, Mom. I'm rebelling. Because it's 13, a film directed by Catherine Hardwicke. It's written by Hardwicke and Nikki Reed, who is one of the stars of the film. If you haven't seen 13, but you're a Jacob head or a Edward head, you would better know Nikki Reed as Rosalie from
Rosalie Cullen
Twilight, mm-hmm. which
and
was directed by Catherine
so
Hardwicke.
Much Cullen in this movie. The way she enters the school and they're like, who's that? It's like, that's Rosalie Cullen.
Also
well,
the
again,
filters.
I said before, I was like, yeah, she's so hot. And I was like, well, she's a child, but I do remember I watched this at 13. And so I think I was just like, that's the coolest bitch I've ever seen in my fucking life.
Exactly. Also a lot like Twilight. There's just like a constant color grade blue tint over most
so
scenes.
Many visual things. The purple bedroom was so
we haven't actually mentioned, by the way, sorry, that it's also directed by the same person. So you I mentioned that Nikki did that. But
Yeah. It's directed by Catherine Hardwicke, who also directed Twilight as well. So it's a little legacy for the team.
Sorry, I was going to interrupt Liz with saying something, but I just wanted to comment on that. I'm like, cut this. Sorry,
in
Anthony.
Twilight and 13, the main girlie has a purple bedroom. And also
The
love interest or the antagonist that like brings out her wild side, sees blood and comes up to them. You know, there's a self-harm element.
Oh my gosh. Maybe the real twin pick is this and Twilight. We'll do Twilight at some point. It'll happen. But hey.
Have we not talked about Twilight franchise?
I don't think so. I don't want to do all of them. I just want to do like the last one really, if we're being honest. So it's a film that was very much based on Nikki Reed's life. I need to ask you guys for help with this one because I really tried to look into whether, like essentially Catherine Hardwicke says Nikki Reed was like a surrogate daughter to her.
She was her stepdaughter.
She was dating.
In a way.
Yeah, dating like her father for a long time and that they like wrote it together based on experiences that Nikki Reed had. And I think it must be that it's not like completely, obviously nothing is, but that it's not completely autobiographical in that I can't really gauge whether Nikki Reed feels closer to the lead character of this story or the character that she plays. So the film, the
I
plot.
I have the answer to that.
Amazing. Well, I'll say the plot and then you can tell me which one they are. So the plot of the film is, loosely based on Reed's life. It follows Tracy, who's like a seventh grade student. It's set in LA and she's, it's kind of that thing where like she's got a pretty like normal, possibly like not dorky friend group, but just like, you know, she's like relatively, I guess, well-adjusted or well-behaved. And then she begins dabbling in substance abuse, sex and crime after being befriended by the character that Nikki Reed plays. And the film really follows, to me, its most interesting element being like the family relationship with Tracy's mother, played by an incredible Holly Hunter.
Elastigirl herself.
Still trying to keep a family together and just the idea of another, like your daughter brings home a new friend that's like clearly a really bad influence, but also themselves has a horrible home life and this idea of wanting to do the good thing and extend help to them, but also feel like as a result of their, you know, maybe not being a good influence, they are themselves pretty manipulative towards the mother, and just the dynamic that gets created is really like ugly and twisted. Mm. So do you know which one Nikki Reeve was closer to?
She relates more to the one that ended up being Evan Rachel Wood. So she sees it. I mean,
the audience surrogate kind of character.
When I was originally actually going to play that role until they got, like, as in she was originally going to do that.
In films, so interesting, that idea of like acting as the other person in an experience, like stories like, you know, a lot of this film was fucking bullshit apparently, but in Honey Boy, Shia LaBeouf playing his apparently abusive dad, like that idea of like sort of exorcising the memory or the idea by putting yourself in the shoes of the other person.
I was going to say the thing I liked about it when looking into it and stuff was that this kind of came because Catherine had seen Nikki kind of from age 12 to 13, she says, go through that mental shift, and it sort of scared her a bit. Yeah. And she was like, oh, I really think that she should have a creative outlet. And that's what made her encourage her to make this movie,
awesome.
Which made me like this more. Like, I actually thought, I was like, quite beautiful and kind of quite like, whoa,
yeah,
I don't know. I
was like, diary.
Yeah. Kind of like write what you know, write this, you know? So she, again, it's not fully her life, but it is a lot of her own experiences. Yeah. Put into this.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
And feelings.
Definitely the things that, like, I guess the main thing that didn't like let me connect to this as much, I still really enjoyed it, but it feels a bit closer to like PSA, like don't have sex, you will get chlamydia and die. No one gets that in this film, but just a film about like these edgy, you know, after school special, you wouldn't steal a TV ad. Mm. I thought about that ad a lot during this.
The color grade is the same.
Yeah. And it's just all this like insane, like handheld sort of like tracking shot vibe. But the family unit, like, exploring this thing of being a mother that, like, you know, Holly Hunt has to, she's a hairdresser out of her own house. She has to do 12 haircuts a day. She has her, like, ex-husband who OD'd in front of the
ex-boyfriend,
kids. Ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
On again, off again.
On it, like, move back into the house. Just this idea of
an ex-husband that's never around for them and is struggling to pay child support a little bit, you know, because he's got a new job. And
yeah. I'd never seen the movie before and I was surprised there was so much of a parent in it. Like, I thought, I guess because I'd watched kids just before.
Yeah.
And you really don't feel an adult presence.
It's the most different element.
Yes.
Of this one.
Focusing on adults being like, what am I supposed to do with you or whatever. But like, I love that she was, I was trying. Indian Golf 909. I loved how she was really like the cool mom. Like she, Nikki Reed almost like flirts with her and like calls her by her first name.
That's the most interesting element of the movie. And when
she's like, mom, can we not go to Melrose because they're in LA? She's like, sure, I'll come with you. And she says, maybe I'll buy some cute platforms or some of that body glitter. And you're like, oh, mom, you're so embarrassing. Like she lets them get away with like the first two acts of the movie because she's like, I'm still like that. I'm still young and free and crazy.
Also that she's going through her own, obviously she's a, you know, ex-addict and is going through AA and has a sponsor that's called multiple times in the movie and kind of has her own problems with regulation and
she's
her own
coming
issues.
Of age too.
Exactly. That so many times the issues kind of fall to the wayside and continue to happen because she gets so overwhelmed that it's sort of just like, passes
that kind
the
of
next
took
day?
Away from the movie for me a little
I agree.
Oh, but it was realistic.
There were enough nuances,
but
it
meant the movie sort of lost momentum to me for a while where I was like, come on, mom, like do
it
something.
It does feel largely like like it doesn't maybe have enough of a secure sense of where we're going. Mm. But another element of that dynamic that I want to highlight is the really clever idea of like, yeah, just naturally how this like Nikki Reed character, how she starts to manipulate the family by also playing on the fact that like Holly Hunter's also like, you're worried about your child because they are going like distancing themselves from you. So
they're starting to do drugs, get piercings.
And come back late at night, like fully tripping out. And just the thing of like, yes, you're like this new girl is a bad influence on my child, but also it's a young girl being like, I need a mother leaf. I need a mother in my life. And it's like actually kind of by having her around, she gets to feel like
yeah,
a
like
mother
she's
again.
A supporter
she
and
gets
stuff.
To be a support again. I thought that the way it painted that was very real, where you're trying to be, again, as you said, like as someone that is like, I'm just getting by. I don't really know how to be a mother, but you know, no one really does. Just always trying to set a firm boundary, that pulling them away and making the problem worse. You're so relieved that you're having fun together again, that you just indulge the bad things again. Like those cycles, I thought, even though as a story, it's a bit aimless, I thought
it
made
rings
it
true for the most part.
I was like, oh, that's the soul of it more for me, as opposed to like, yes, you need to show them going out and being bad, but those things
just as many
shoplifting.
We see that. And then we also sort of see them like, even though, yeah, it's still always got a bit of a tinge to it, especially a sexualized tinge that is worrying to the parents. But equal times we see them like dress up in feather boas and come and like perform their dance to the moms. Like,
I mean, yes,
it's a lot of kind of like, oh, you know, them having this extended sleepover kind of vibes.
So
that,
true.
You know what I mean? It's, yeah, it's like, you do kind of understand how she gets away with it for a while. And it is a very quick turnover from, I mean, this sort of plot line, I guess, is revealed in one flashback to be that she witnessed the mother's on and off again boyfriend OD, and that's been really traumatizing for her. And then he's just moved back into the house. And the initial kind of boundary breaking moment, especially when someone's trying to have their own autonomy at 13 years old, is that her mum does not respect her boundaries, that her mum is, you know, fucking up in this way by bringing this guy back in.
Yeah.
She sees it as her mum doesn't respect herself or respect her or her brother. And that's the big jarring moment that kicks off this whole change. So,
and the biggest nature of, you know, having a child, like what this film allows by having a parent figure, whereas the other film doesn't. In kids, the film Kids, they're all sort of just like raising, like New York City is raising them, like the streets are raising them. Whereas this movie is that idea of like
the parent is actually New York City.
The parent, the real character in the film,
New York City is almost like a parent. In the, film.
the street crime is really the filter through which we experience the film. In 13, because we're speaking about the lovely Nikki Reed, and we're speaking about
how good is Twilight Breaking Dawn Part Two.
Things which are good for Nikki Reed, and like I just read this quote that was quite sad in regards to the husband character like ODing on like this idea that her trauma was the husband, no, not the Nikki character, that the lead character film Tracy has witnessed her father figure OD, and that her mother has disrespected that boundary, is that Nikki Reed has spoken in 2012 about regretting how she wrote the father character in the film as it being disrespectful. And I feel like we
she
should
meant more the corporate dad, like her birth dad.
I think so too. I think you personally keep mentioning him like he's a father figure, and he never reads like that to me.
I think
wouldn't Nikki Reed, if she is if the Nikki Reed character, if the actress Nikki Reed is based on Tracy, then the vacant father.
I think
would
the vacant father she's talking about in the quote is her useless bio dad who shows up and
is
like constantly answering his work phone. And I think Nikki Reed is saying like that wasn't accurate.
Right.
Like
he's a producer, assume the relevant person is
like,
the dad on the phone,
now,
not the dad who's ODing in the bathroom. Yeah. So I mean, I don't know.
He's a producer of the film.
I don't know if he produced this film or not, but he's a producer from
producer of film. Yeah. Well, that would read. Yeah, totally. Mm. Yeah.
I wanted to ask,
there you go.
What were your favorite early 2000s style things? I loved one of the bad boys trying to get into Tracy's heart by beatboxing at her. He says, check this out. To Tracy. And she's like, wow.
Whoa.
It's so good.
My one is that they steal someone's wallet and buy Skechers.
Yes.
That's my favorite one personally.
The corset tops.
It really is that PSA thing where like, because we just watched Kids, I assumed at some point, like obviously all the things they're doing are horrible, but they were mostly doing things where I was like, that looks fun. Like,
yeah, getting high and running around in the sprinklers. I was like,
yeah, they trip out with a bunch of boys. I'm like, this is going to go bad. And then they're like playing the sprinklers.
Whippets in both of these movies actually. doing nangs.
Yes,
there was
movie. Getting crazy. Whippet reference in both these movies. That's the twin relation.
The Whippets in the first film, I was like, this is the evil spirit of Whippets. This is horrible. Because they like use it to channel their misogyny. Whereas in this one, I'm like, I guess punching your best friend, but like hanging out with your best friend. What a time.
That's how they start the movie, them beating each other up after taking nitrous.
I haven't been to that place before.
Look,
personally.
Look, how did we get here? And they're like beating each other up. And that looks fun to you?
I don't know. I'm like, kind of. If she's taking off the rings,
that's a direct pull from her life, by the way, except, I mean, more sadly, apparently slapping herself. Nikki Reed.
She didn't even have a friend to slap the shit out of her.
Try and hit herself to that. Anyway.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so.
This has made me respect her. As you said, it's actually so beautiful. I love the idea of like using
that made me
an
like
artistic
it more, what I
output
said.
As a means of making something that makes light of or gives some healing to the experience of it, of your childhood.
And that,
that's bleak.
You know, this movie, like I watched when I was sort of doing a little bit of research into it, I skimmed through. For the 10-year anniversary, Nikki and Evan both came together and did a Q&A. And they were both like, we don't watch this movie like this. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of is a representation of quite a specific, and it was like very transformative for both of them. Like it was a huge thing. They did the whole like living in the place that they filmed it and sleeping in the bed together. Mm. And like they were really close and kind of now at that point, at least, I don't know anymore, but we're like, we're kind of close again in our lives because we're going through some similar things again.
Yeah.
And no, it was actually quite interesting to watch. You were like, oh yeah, this was, you know, to both of these people, quite a transformative thing. And for Nikki, I mean, like the thing she said afterwards, which is so interesting is, and like, you're like so true. The first thing she did was this very self autobiographical kind of purge and big thing.
Crazy.
And she's like, I don't think it'll ever get better for me
than that.
And that's her debut. Like, you know what I mean? Just that thing of being like, oh, I kind of got into acting through this thing that like nothing really will ever touch that.
Did Vanessa Hudgens get invited to this Q&A?
No, she didn't. Vanessa Hudgens has an incredibly small part, but it's also her first
movie.
As like
movie. The nice, nice friend.
Debut.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Very first.
Mm-hmm.
What a way to start. And only went up from there. I feel like the rest of my thoughts on this film I want to put right next to kids. So maybe it's time to chat about them, get all these kids in a room together and keep a close eye on them.
Okay, I want to start off by saying that I teased everybody at the end of Kids by saying I had a really cool fact about
kids
13.
Fact. 13 facts.
And the cool fact, it's not very cool, was that Catherine Hardwick, the director, her most recent film you might remember her from was Mafia Mama.
Yes,
Mafia Mama.
Colette.
Yeah.
And I'd like you to know that when I worked at Pentridge Cinema, we would have people, I'm telling this like it's a joke, but it's very real. Racing at like, it would be at 8:45. They would be there at 9 o'clock and they'd be like, Mafia Mama. And we'd be like, it was our best selling film. Busy season, busy, busy cinema season. Mafia Mama played. Catherine Hardwick
Mafia
had
Mama too?
The people.
She knew what the people wanted.
She knew.
The women probably of Australia wanted to see their Toni Collette as the Mafia.
As the Mama of the Mafia.
Like, didn't look blue as fuck as well, did it? I think from the trailer, it didn't have the Catherine Hardwick incredibly blue tint to it.
Wow, maybe the tint is relational to the success because there is a lot of warm tones in Twilight as well. Anyway, that was the funnest of facts. I'm thrilled.
Yeah, no,
Mafia,
no,
I'm
chest.
Hand me a beer, bro. That was awesome.
Now we can get on the podcast.
So my friends, compare the pics, 13 and kids. Same age, between the ages of like 10 and 14. Same income, however much money they could steal from
relatively
the parents'
low
handbag.
Income. Yeah, yes,
that.
True.
Yeah.
These two films, obviously they have a lot in common. The thing I'd like to kick it off with and point to both of you for is these are two films that take very different, like I guess, presentation styles in that Kids goes for like very raw, brutally honest, both in how it is shot, where it feels like it's almost like a documentary footage, and especially in street casting, like ethically questionable means of shooting like real things happening, sometimes in improvisational ways. Whereas 13 is almost like not only quite scripted, but like quite personal to the writer and star of the film and director of the film in a way that means that when it is presenting all of these things, it's in a much more like traditionally structured way, I guess. What do you, Darcy, I guess enjoy is the wrong word. I guess like what feels more effective for you, or do you think is a better
just
vessel?
The filmmaking style?
Maybe what do you think is more effective, and also what do you think is the best way to express these ideas?
Oh, I think what's funny is, I mean, both of them are from a co-written with a very young person who just lived so through that experience or is living through that experience. So I do feel like the authenticity that keeps both of these as like really, you know, that's well true. Remembered and kind of like
they do both have that.
Yeah, they got this sort of cult kind of idea to them. I think is that core sense of authenticity that like despite either film's faults, you kind of can't take away from it. I definitely feel like now when you look at 13, it does feel a little too after school special as far as plot. I mean, sorry, another thing to note is both of these movies were written in about under a week.
Nice.
Both of them, you know what I mean? Like first one was that Harmony had a short film that then Larry approached him and was like, can you make this feature length? And he wrote it in like 6 days
like
or something.
In the park that's in the film, that is the park where Larry Clark found Harmony Korine.
And the front page of his script said, by the great writer Harmony Korine.
Incredible. And he really followed through on that prophecy for himself, I suppose. But yeah.
He is someone that does earn the, like, if I saw a trailer that said, like, from the dangerous mind of Harmony Korine, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess to me, I'm like, the edginess and the, like, not even the edginess, the strength with which it says something kids holds up more, some of the, I guess, the
it's
strength of the message.
It's definitely more trendy and artful and stuff.
Yeah.
But there is sort of like this, there are some little parts in 13 that, I guess it is the authenticity that can't be scrubbed out, even just that it is a capsule of its time that really keep it as like something that people still watch and are quite like, God, that what a movie. And I'm like, even just, down to the fashion, both these movies have people mostly wearing their own wardrobes.
I spent so much.
Do you really see the real fashion of those people, the real lives of them in a way?
Yeah,
what teens were wearing and thinking was cool and stuff.
And with 13, we did all comment more on the idea of like not to downplay any of the issues it expressed. And I think it largely did express them really authentically. But there's so much more of like an aesthetic enjoyment to the world of 13 and the fashion and that era and stuff.
The zoom ins, like the.
Yeah.
To all of their like bracelets, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like that
Converse and
part of the film where I could like semi-casually watch 13, whereas as you said, Darce, I'm like not going to watch kids again if I can help it.
Yeah, no. I feel bad that I even made everyone watch it a little.
No, good to rewatch.
It just when I was watching it, I walked out of the room a lot.
It was a classic Darcy case of being like, let's watch this thing and then watching it out of the door the whole time because you can't do it with the cringe.
It makes me so much worse as I get older. It just makes me so, just like it's a painful watch when you're like, oh.
Do you guys have that for anything?
So I've heard about this via Noah in the past and I feel like I need to ask more questions.
Yeah,
do you literally mean like that you will stand in a doorframe and like consistently, continuously watch the film? Or do you mean like you will walk in and out of the
room? I walk in and out. I take very long bathroom breaks.
Okay, cool.
Well, like half does an errand. You'll do your laundry a little bit and like
mildly.
But
are you like, don't pause, don't worry? Or are you like,
Noah sometimes will pause and I'm like, no, the whole point was you were meant to keep it running. And then I can just.
Did you have any of them with 13 or only kids?
13 was fine, really.
Yeah. We were hanging out with 13.
Yeah, 13 was whatever. But yeah, kids. It's just that opening scene. I think I forgot immediately how painful of a watch it is. Like you're like,
it's his narration starting with her, the voice of this woman that is like this girl that is losing her virginity to this boy saying in the background, "It hurts, it hurts."
Mm. What about the settings of both films are so different. Like Kids is like the insane, crazy urban New York one, and 13 is like.
Suburban-y LA.
The terror of like
evil millennial, post-millennial like culture is reaching into our suburbs now. And it's
they
like,
want to buy all these labels and, you know,
Yeah, you're right. There's a real like consumer element to the 2003 thing where they're like obsessed with, the like that wouldn't be like the cool thing to do in the world of kids is to be like obsessed with, you know, the brand names you're wearing and stuff like it is in 13.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the kids from Kids would beat the shit out of
Oh my God. Yeah. If we're, if they compare the pics was who would win in a battle, fight. You're like, Jesus Christ. I don't think the stress they're preparing themselves with are really going to prepare them for getting bashed across the face with a skateboard, which literally happens.
Because then like kids. Killing that guy. Yeah. Like that's a
that
big
scene introduced me to Daniel Johnston, the outsider musician that the song Casper the Friendly Ghost is playing over the top. Like one of my fave artists.
Oh my God, wow. Yeah. So you had you
how
seen
many
this a few
saw
times?
That fight? Sorry, I just wanted to interject on that fight. That is literally he put that in there because that was a fight he saw happen about 20 meters away from where they filmed it in the park.
Jesus. Wow. And just recreated it right there.
And was like, put it in the movie.
It's definitely the kind of detail that makes you be like, that's a bit too much. And you're like, no, it literally happened. That's why it's here. We knew people would think it's too much. It's very real. I don't know. I feel like I definitely enjoyed Kids more. I think 13, my favorite thing about it is Holly Hunter's performance and the family dynamic and the portrait it paints of like that house, I think is like really interesting idea of like it. I don't think it is expressing the new best friend, bad influence character as like all good or all bad. I think like really like, honestly and like empathetically
paints
her. Well,
the tension point at
her.
The end in a way is kind of like who was a bad influence on who?
Yeah.
I found that really
kind of
legit.
Do go. But you know what I mean? That I am kind of like there really is something to kind of like that they both were on these a bit of like careeny downward spirals that have just like joined forces, you know?
Yeah, it was the perfect storm
toxic
thing.
Codependent besties or whatever. Yeah.
I did find that scene with Holly Hunter. I just want to point out like the scene where it really is that moment where like again, if we're talking about class in these films as well, that idea of like, if you are a recovering alcoholic, now you have a family, you're trying not to blow
juggling
up your own
a few
life,
different jobs.
Juggling all these different things, you like aren't great at expressing your emotions or you're maybe not great at like knowing how to reach your daughter. So that idea of, you know, what we were saying before of like all the different moments where you're trying to please your kid, then tell your kid off and blah, blah, blah. Just the moment of like, when this girl, like other girl guest is like out of the house, like almost like grabbing your child and holding them in a like, I don't know how to talk you out of the way your like fight or flight is trying to get you to run out the door right now, other than just be like, I've got you, I've got you, I've got you. You know what I mean? Like she holds her on the kitchen floor and then they like sleep all night and all day the next day. Like it's just that thing of that motherly moment of like it becomes just the body experiencing like, please don't go, please let's not make this worse, let's like reconnect.
I have a question
that I quite liked
about both films. A scene like that, I was just picturing our mum or our mum seeing 13 in a cinema and that scene like reducing them to tears and being like, oh, imagine if that was my daughter. What do you think about if you were a parent? Would you show either of these films to your kids? And do you think they are made in a way for parents as a cautionary tale?
13.
One of the films certainly is more than the other.
Yeah, 13 is. Yeah. Yet then there was sort of critique of it at the time, I think, or by time and now, where people are like, I don't think this is like it's targeted towards teens, so I think they'll be seeing it, but it really does feel like it's for parents who I don't necessarily know will go and see this.
Mm. Yeah.
I guess it's Hunter, true, actually, I don't know, might have brought them in, but it is that thing where it sort of maybe then is a little confused
as
far as audience.
I found it maybe a little juvenile for like an adult drama.
That's what
like,
I mean, exactly. I'm like, I guess its ultimate thing, and that's who it's written by. I mean, it's a split of that, right? When you kind of think about how it was created out of a worrying parental figure with this, you know, young sort of daughter, is that it's sort of a dual movie. I guess a mother and daughter could watch it together.
Very true. Yeah. And then Kids, like we keep coming back to the hardness of this like cynical take that probably like is largely also presenting an exaggerated like stigma of a lot of these ideas. I did want to point out like one quote from this documentary about the cast of kids, like where are they now sort of thing, that I thought really spoke to that idea of feeling like the film did have a perspective that painted these kids in a way that they felt exploited, a lot of them did, where so this is Hamilton Harris, who is in the film in the park scene and then directed this documentary. And he said, Larry Clark, the director, Larry always says, I tell the truth and the truth can be shocking. Well, my response to that is, whose truth? Is it the truth? And what are the costs of telling that truth to other people? It was marketed in a particular way that had an impact on those who were sold as particular characters. 26 years have passed, so you can see the consequences of that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Just being like, yeah, for something that really sold itself as being like raw, it's hard to be like, we were all very much feeling a lens of what our life was that didn't feel like what our life was.
Mm. Some people really say that, especially because this is a funny movie, it's like, again, funny that Catherine went on to do Lords of Dogtown, which is about like the skate scene. Whereas this movie is really funny. So many, I saw a review from someone saying about Kids, I mean, that it's like, what if the skate scene was devoid of skating? Which really skating, most of the people, like that's what these people were. They were skaters. And for so many of those people, skating was their thing. Like that was the thing that actually they funneled a lot of their energy into, and this was the stuff outside of it. Not that that's a bad thing, but I think just, yeah, a lot of people's critiques is also like, it's the truth if you even took away any of the thing, like we actually were kind of like a family, or a lot of people didn't have homes, so they did kind of, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't wholesome necessarily, but there is this element that's sort of left out, or this like passion that we all shared together or
there's
came
such
together
a choice
for
there to be
that
like,
wasn't there.
The community is always rallying around like who are we punching down on, or who are we attacking or talking about behind their back.
This also ties into 13 a bit. Both movies have like one a special bad boy character who's a bad influence. They're both called Marcus and they're both black. It's like the demonic Marcus of the turn of the millennium who was ruining good kids' lives.
Oh, fully.
I don't think either movie really escapes these kind of criticisms.
Oh, totally. I felt pretty pointedly in 13 as well, when you're like living in LA and there's the only presence of like a black teen we see in this film.
Intentional. It's not explored enough, but it definitely feels like that's why those girls are attracted to those men through like the fetishized almost like this is going to make me feel more close to whatever these ideas are that we're negatively associating with these men or these boys. Again, they're all kids.
No, that's very true that like it's definitely not like irrelevant and just casually cast in a racist way, but there is racism to the not exploration of it.
Sorry, I want to comment quickly because we've been talking about the exploitation of kids and it's commented on a lot. There's a part when I was like reading about 13 and I was like, oh, it's not necessarily exploitative like the they had on set like the child welfare thing and whatever. Like this movie was made correctly. But there is a scene where they're making out with an adult man.
Oh, they're both kissing
man.
The lifeguard
guy. Like they're kissing
guy.
This guy. Yeah. Like they come to his house. I actually think it's a really interesting scene.
Yeah.
One of the more interesting to me at least, what it kind of comments on in the movie. But that man was actually 28 years old and felt like there's like commentary about it where it's like, oh yeah, he was like when he found out that they were like 14, like 15 years old in real life or whatever as the actors, he was like, this makes me really uncomfortable. And they were kind of like laughed off like, oh, it'll be fine and stuff. And like the child welfare person was there and whatever. And then it does come back to the thing of being like, kitchen be in movies,
thing.
Man. Like you're like, what?
Like should not be. It's so
damn.
Weird. Yeah.
Wait, but if kids were in movies, if kids are in the movies, kids and 13, which one would you guys choose as a superior film? For me, it is Kids.
Kids is the better movie to me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think it's Kids as well.
Yeah. I think unanimous, which I think maybe just because I watched it with Noah and saw, you know, the way we reacted.
Like just stated on it a little
The very little, first thing you said about Kids was my thought as well, which was I had expected the edginess to be just that it had like laid everything bare. But to me, it was being like the perspective that is in it that feels exploitative to these young guys that felt like it was really their story. I actually get that that would feel hurtful to feel like I was really thinking my story would be expressed and we were just expressed as these like violent little sociopaths.
Yeah.
But I actually feel like it as a film and like that perspective to me felt quite writerly. It felt like a story that had been written and its lens was that. And I found that lens like really interesting and kind of refreshing at that age of like what the age of these young boys.
Watching it, yeah, through the lens that I guess who knows if, you know, it's warranted to say that, but yeah, it kind of really spoke to me on a very like, it just felt relentless. Like it is a movie that is relentless and I think that has a point. Especially in comparison, obviously, when you have to compare the two, 13 doesn't really leave you with too much, I suppose. Like, I don't.
It holds your hand a lot more. Yeah. Much more Hollywood.
And it's more of a shallow dip into some things that I think are really interesting. I mean, again, it's so much more about women.
I wish the girlies got together, or I wish there was more of a like.
Well, Evan says that she had a big crush on Nikki when she did the thing in real life.
Cute. Oh my gosh. I very much think that it's interesting that you touched on the like, the only market it feels like it has is like the 13 is for like girls and their mothers or something. Darcy's, it's such an interesting midway 13 film. 13
is a mother and daughter film. I imagine the most awful father and son in the world watching kids and being like, yeah.
Oh God.
Ain't it like that, buddy? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Again, that different kinds of, yeah, problems and upbringings and stuff like that. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's
really,
kids for me.
Really good picks.
Yeah, great one.
I'm glad at least we could. It's a little more interesting to talk about than I thought. I don't know why. Yeah, I randomly came up with it because of the concept, but then I was like, oh God, have I, you know, like how much did I kind of feel about these movies on watching them?
I thought we did really well. And I think especially for films where like their quality and how they were made or, you know, produced and distributed and stuff is a separate convo. It's a fun ones to talk about. And with that, I want to ask who you think would direct a film about the dangers of kids being exposed to all kinds of bad things, but exclusively for a triplet that's always lived in the attic. Like who would make that?
Oh God, sorry. That question took a turn. I don't know what you're speaking about.
What problems
the triplet in the attic is already horribly corrupted. No director can worsen his state.
So you think it would be a really raw expression of what are the things that the triplicate is exposed to? Because it's not like whippets and shoplifting. It's probably like the mold up there, you know?
Yeah, he can't asbestos. Have it.
Can you repeat the question?
Who do you think would direct a kids and 13-esque film about the life of the triplet that lives in the attic? Like his edgy
I would like
threat.
To be like a stop motion directors? Movie.
Of anyone in the world.
I think it should be a stop motion person.
Oh, that's good.
And the triplet is like eating bugs and making a pigeon route like Hugo in The Simpsons.
Yeah, yeah, that's
I think
good.
He's in the attic. He's like laid out a floor plan of like all the streets of New York. So to him, he like lives in a whole city, but it's just like him and his shackles. So in that case, maybe Harmony Korine. Let's check on that little guy.
Kids today, they don't even like to read book or buy property. They're all too busy rizzing themselves on GlackTube, investing in Buttcoin, pooping in Skibidi Toilet, Infinity Vapes, Toctic Dances, bisexual tattoo cafes, caring about one another more than the diamond industry. Makes me sick.
Darcy, you're up.
Okay, my triplet in the attic. It's funny because I wrote down a couple of things loosely, but they've been mentioned on the podcast.
Yeah, you
was,
did your research.
Well, no, I.
Good for you.
They're not great mentions because one of them I haven't even watched. Well, both I haven't watched properly. One was just that Q&A I mentioned with Nikki Reed and Rachel Evan Wood about the 10-year anniversary of 13. And then the other one was like, I'm interested to watch We Were Once Kids, the doco that was made what year? Pretty recently.
21?
Yeah, recently. Yeah. And it took longer to get released because the people that had property of the original footage and maybe the Weinsteins, I don't know, actually I've looked at that, but they were trying to keep it from getting released at all because apparently it makes Larry Clark in particular look like really, really bad.
And sorry to go from that sad note to a slightly funnier note. Then my other one is, if you enjoyed 13, you're going to love Degrassi.
Yes!
I don't know about either of you guys or even Anthony, but I watched a lot
What's the
of Degrassi,
Degrassi
The Next
song?
Generation. Every day, I know I can make it through.
Woo!
Ooh. When I hold on, if I do.
Imagine the kids. Imagine the kids and kids listening to that before they do their horrible deeds. It's sounding much less. Maybe it lives in 13.
Well, look,
yeah, 13 lives.
It has just every storyline you could think of. Child pregnancy, teenage, like mouth chlamydia, it's got it. And there's a specific character called Manny Santos. Santos. And she kind of has the arc throughout the whole thing that's very similar to like a 13 arc in which you're like, oh no, you've really tipped into sort of being a bad girl. No. And there's a part where Drake, Aubrey Graham. Yeah, he plays a role on Degrassi.
You know, he's
on
Drake Degrassi. Is in Degrassi.
Oh, you meant it when you were making the Drake joke before.
Yes.
I was like, why are we talking about Drake?
Oh, no. You think I'm making some kind of pedophile joke? Like, oh, he's there.
Maybe.
No, he's in it. He gets shot in the back and he's in a wheelchair.
He's in a wheelchair for half of it. Anyway, I mean, there's school shootings in Degrassi. It's a full-on show.
God.
Every single, again, after-school special topic you can think of under the sun, they have it. But there's an episode where Manny Santos is like, it's sort of like I guess it's a child porn episode.
Oh
like
God.
She like strips at a party and then that video goes like viral around. And goes around.
Money.
And his character goes, I can't. I'm like, why were me and my friend
Wait, Drake
growing up
this.
Obsessed with saying this? But Drake's character goes, Manny Santos, my how you've grown. I wish that was an overstatement of what it is, but I will play it for you afterwards. Anyone, you can look it up.
Oh my God, that's incredible. Yeah. Was it the kind of thing where you were
dribbling in the attic?
That's beautiful.
Drake saying many sent us my hair. Okay.
Was it the kind of thing where you were supposed to be like, no, Manny, don't go down that road, but you were secretly like, yes, this is so much better.
Well, again, that's kind of every, similar, we were talking about Laura and SVU. Why do I keep saying it
You always got to say SUV.
I know. SUV. But I was about to say, it's exactly the same as that show where you're like, well, I'm kind of more into the episodes where some horrific thing happens, unfortunately. Like, I'm here for the,
normal
the dramatized plot lines.
Yeah. We were saying normal Law and Order where it's like, oh, we got to stop the mafia. You're like, boring. Show me the sex criminal.
That's kind of like this show as well. You're like, I am looking for the ones that are kind of specifically like, I don't want the one where it's like, this person's parents are getting divorced. I'm like, I don't care.
I want them to be making horrible mistakes.
I don't know why I'm using that voice too because it's Canadian. It's a Canadian show.
Mm.
But yeah, no, you want the ones where you're like, oh no, somebody is going through a bit of a dark period and is hooking up with boys at the park and then she's in the school play but she can't kiss that person because she has mouth chlamydia.
That's
no, it's gonorrhea of the mouth.
Line.
Gonorrhea of the mouth.
Right.
Yeah.
Can we watch it now? Like, as a genuine suggestion, I'm like, I would watch this show because you could introduce me to it. Well,
I don't know if
there's tons of it.
There's so much of it. It goes on and on and on and on.
Is there a Next Generation as well?
That's what this is from, the Next Generation.
What's the original generation? Are they just like toddlers?
It's just Degrassi. It was like in the...
But do they do edgy things?
Sorry?
Do they do edgy things?
Probably a bit less edgy.
I think it might have been even more after school, especially. There's then a next generation. It goes on and on and on. It's like a full thing in Canada. Yeah, huge.
What a legacy.
Oh, Canada.
Thank you so much for bringing
You're
that
welcome.
In. That is exactly the tone of these two films. So you've nailed that. Eliza.
I picked a song by The Runaways called Dead End Justice.
Ooh, cool.
I used to have this Runaways album on my little iPod Touch and would walk to school, strut into school thinking, oh yeah, I'm a little runaway. I'm such a bad girl. And I'm on my way to like...
I like that.
Before
Actually,
school.
Yeah, I like that
That's
too.
A
I
good
like
idea.
When you had kind of a similar thing, like what made you feel edgy and cool when you were growing up.
And it's also that it's a... The song, it's like a crazy story song that sort of goes through movements. And it made me think of 13 as well because it's like the two girls, good girl and bad girl, like Joan Jett and Cherie Curry, who is now like a crazy right-wing conspiracy theorist. But the whole song is them talking about getting sent to like a jail for bad kids. And they like, there's a bit of talking during the song where they're like, quick, grab that stick. I'm going to beat the guard over the head with it. They're like, run, run, run and stuff. Like,
That's
it's
awesome.
A really fun little opera. And I used to strut up the hill and be like, I need justice. And like, just feel real
I'm
cool.
trapped in my cage as you went to your like, really nice.
Yes.
Upper class room.
There's some crazy Love rhymes it. In it as well. There's a bit where they're like, they hit me with the board. It hurt just like a sword. Like, that was real cool to me. Sure. I don't know.
Darcy, what was the album that connected you to your teen angst?
at that age, at the age of 13.
I wasn't a big Avril Lavigne music person, so unfortunately.
Like a So Fresh.
Probably, right? Yeah, I was in a lot of dance classes. Yeah. And I was really listening to the top 40 songs that were played in my dance classes.
If only you had JoJo See was Karma, you could have.
I was listening to Suddenly I See.
No one understands me.
If you played Suddenly I See to the kids in Kids or 13, they would have turned their act around and.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the turn is when you get on Tumblr and you just like, you like start slapped across Lana the face by Lana Del Rey. You're listening to like, you know, like Carmen or like, this is what makes us girls.
I was thinking this is what makes us girls with 13.
Yep.
I can't relate to you guys at all.
We don't stick together when we put love first.
I can't relate to you guys at all. I listened to the Plain White Tees Every Second Counts album and it radicalized me immediately. And I've been this cool for a long, long time, baby.
Yeah. Hey there, Delilah.
That actually is the bleakest.
What's it like New York City? That's the link.
There you go.
What?
What's it like in New York City?
What's it like in New York City?
Maybe when we go to New York, we try and find Delilah. Yeah, that's what they're doing.
So pretty. Yes, you do.
We should hunt her down when we go to New York.
Delilah.
Yeah, we'll find her. Yeah. They were going to make a TV show out of, this isn't a joke, they were going to make a TV show out of Hey There, Delilah.
Do you know the real story?
I know.
These days are so loose.
The story behind the real song.
She didn't like know him at all. They weren't.
Of course,
a couple.
She didn't.
She was like a sister of his friend at school.
Classic.
And she's like really put off by the song and is like, "It's so weird. We don't know each other at all." And he's talking about like, "My guitar will save our lives. I'll make history."
But there's
for
like
you.
No other like. If you were like guess the actual story behind that song, I almost would word for word have guessed that.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, some kind of thing of being like, actually, I can't believe it didn't work out with us. And you're like, okay, I was like, I babysat you once.
You're like, the things we could never say to each other, we can finally say. She's like, I have not thought about you. I really haven't. Well, for my Triplet in the Attic, we have obviously got Kids, which is written by Harmony Korine. And because there's so much interesting stuff to talk about with these two films, we'll have to watch another Harmony Korine one day. I haven't seen Beach Bum and I'd love to see it. So maybe we'll do that at some point. But if you want to get a sense of the kind of character we're dealing with here, I think they were both very zany, obviously. But like Larry Clark was like a dude in his 50s when he directed Kids. And Harmony Korine was like very young, like a young kid. And was shot to stardom from this film at a really young age and was essentially drug using like the whole time, like not anymore, but for a lot of the very successful indie films he made, he was using drugs. And he has gone on The Late Show with David Letterman number of times. And every time he would go, it's one of those cases, I almost want everyone to listen to it and watch it and say whether you think they are ironically playing up how much they dislike or like how much David Letterman, whether he is playing up how much he dislikes him or whether it's actually the vibe they have. There are three interviews in particular, and then Harmony Korine was banned from The Late Show. Quote unquote,
how did he get on so many times if they genuinely didn't like him?
Because it was like played as really good TV. It's this weird thing where like it's almost performance art. Like it's kind of incredible. He's like just saying things and no matter what he says, David Letterman is just like, you are such a punk little shit. Like hates him. And the story goes that he was banned for life and only recently they told the story that the reason he was banned for life was because he was brought in to promote yet another film. And David Letterman went in to try to find Meryl Streep to say like, hello, like, you know, just say hi to all the guests before the show and saw Harmony Korine foraging around in Meryl Streep's handbag for money and was banned for life.
Yeah.
So there is like a whole history there that is really fascinating to watch. Again, I would say go into it with a lens for like, art project. Like it's like Nathan Fielder vibe almost. It's
Andy
really
Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman is the better one. Yeah.
On Johnny Carson.
Really weird. But yeah, that's a real diverse array of stuff to get to for these two films that are really brutal. Das, love having you on.
Thank you.
Really
for
great pick.
Thanks for saying really cool discussion. Things about it. It made it more interesting to me that I'd picked it because it was nice to hear everyone's thoughts.
They were such
I want to finish on what Anthony, do you
Are you going to watch them?
Yeah. What are your feelings about these movies? Or did you know about them like culturally?
No.
No, not at all.
No, I don't think so. But I'm never a good yardstick for that sort of thing. So that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
What I want to hear from you is what was like music that when you're a little kid, you were like, oh, I'm so bad. And that like made you feel like a little rebel.
I don't know about bad. I know about sad. Oh. And that was very, like, I listened to a lot of.
That's so deep, Anthony.
Oh, sorry.
I don't know about bad.
I know about sad. Oh,
like, oh. I don't mean to.
No, take us right down.
Mislead you, which is to say that I definitely also wanted desperately to be very rebellious.
You were. We don't have to talk about it now.
But I don't think that I listened to music that was particularly like punk or anything. Like, I listened to a lot of like Radiohead and stuff as a youngish teenager.
You got sadicalized by Radiohead. Sadicalized.
Yeah.
You're a creep and a weirdo.
Yeah, definitely. I watched an Australian series like a Skins ripoff.
Oh my God, what's it called?
On Slide.
Oh my God, I've watched this as well.
It was one season.
Why? It was good. I thought like,
yeah,
well,
I thought it was all right.
I mean,
well, we kissed.
It was nowhere near as edgy as Skins even
no.
managed yeah. to be. But yeah, that yeah. was a funny one-off
like,
thing.
What age was this?
That's a good question. I think I would have been, like I roughly would have been about 13.
Are you going to say that you were on it, Anthony?
Sorry?
Were you on it?
Oh my God.
On the show.
Yeah. Well, no. like, okay, go on. I for wish. A second, I thought your I was
tortured,
about to find out
your tortured past is that you have been exploited from a child star role, like in Kids.
No. I just, yeah, that's my like, that's yeah. springs to mind as like yeah. rebellious totally. Media that I was encountering.
That's a real
that
deep
time,
cut niche, yeah.
Yeah. So if anyone.
I want to watch Slide now.
I don't even know if that would be available anywhere.
No, what I want to watch either. Is Degrassi. You actually like sold it to me as
sorry,
a triplet.
Sorry, I sold
that
Degrassi
too.
Yeah, there's some really iconic moments.
I just want to
Degrassi,
pick like an arc of one character and just like.
I watched them with
in.
My friend Africa, oh, like nearly, and Fiona in primary school and start of high school and watched way too many of them.
My, how you've grown.
Manny Santos, my, how you've grown. I'm not even doing it justice. It's so good. It's so bad.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
Wow. I really feel like we have indulged in things that young children just never should. So naughty, so bad. We are going to say goodbye. You can follow us on Insta, Facebook, Letterboxd. I usually would say the things that we're going to be doing next week, but we actually, because we've been banking these episodes at the moment because Darcy and I are about to go to the land of Kids.
The concrete jungle.
The concrete jungle. You're
going to say the
tomato.
Land of the free.
No, yeah. not that. oh boy. Sorry, that's an in joke that doesn't play on the podcast at all.
Yeah. If they've hung around this long, I guess they're about as far in as they'll ever get. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're used to our wandering. We are going to New York and we don't know what the next app's going to be. I think we want to do something while we're over there. Maybe we'll become our own little Larry Clark and Harmony Korine and capture a real authentic
You'll find some kids
New York
and exploit
experience.
Them into a podcast episode. Yep.
Yeah.
Where you're like, yeah, talk about all the violence you do and all the drugs you do. And the kids are like, I literally only play
Fortnite.
Skibbity game on my phone. What are you talking about?
Skibbity toilet or whatever they're into.
Yeah. Oh, that
kids,
one scares me.
Today.
That one rocks me.
I might go rogue and record a whole episode just by myself without telling you about it.
Ooh,
and then like
oh
ghost upload
God.
It to the
You
to
have
the feed,
power to.
And then you'll be like, the fuck is this? We've well, been also, hacked. And I'll be like, yeah,
Anthony, has that
we
ever
have
happened?
Been hacked. That's so weird.
As
and
in,
it's
have
got my
you
voice.
Come on with your own picks?
Oh, like back in Twin Peaks days, yeah.
Yeah, you did.
We did Chicken Run. And
The Great Escape.
Something. Yeah, and The Great Escape.
Okay.
Yeah, that was
And we
funny.
Attempted to record an episode twice.
With your partner, now and then, married partner, Hannah.
And then we were like, oh, it didn't work because your old place had, the power kept going out. And it's actually one of those classic COVID things where you're like, oh, we'll get it next week. And then that was we never did the podcast ever again.
Yeah, that was literally the first session that never happened after the previous episode that did get released. So yeah.
That's right. But don't worry, this will not be the last episode of Midnight Screening. It just, who knows what
it's
will be next.
Just the beginning, baby.
Just the beginning, baby. Thanks for listening and stay safe.
Stay in school.
Yeah, kids. Stay off drugs.
This is your brain on drugs.
You wouldn't steal a TV.
You wouldn't steal a car.
You might steal.
some sketches or cool earrings
or some cute body glitter.
Bye.
Bye.